You guys doing okay? Good. I want to talk about a little bit about and show you a little bit about editing, which is, you know, you can take a good editor can take fairly mediocre material and make it into something, you know, beyond what it was. And a poor editor will take good material and degrade it into, you know, not very good video. But as we saw this afternoon, do you remember with the Nurses Needed piece, we saw Megan Stack running around, and I tried to shoot it in a fashion that complemented and that matched the energy that we saw her exert as she moved around the hospital. Just like we can use these cameras to accentuate what people are doing when we film them, we can use the editing technique to accentuate what we're trying to put across, the message we're trying to transmit in the final piece. I'm going to show you two pieces here that are very, very different. One is just a couple of minutes of a piece that my wife and I did in Greece a couple of years ago at a yoga camp. It's a place where you go, you know, and a British teacher who's married to, I'm sorry, he's Dutch, she's British. People go there, it was a 3-week a yoga camp. And you go there and you know, people come from all over the world. These are considered master yogis. And, you know, as you would imagine, the scene there is very tranquil. People move very slowly. It's very quiet. It's very low key. The second piece is a piece that I did a number of years ago. It was part of this series. It was called Trauma, Life in the ER. Probably a lot of you remember this. It's about hospital, you know, emergency rooms. And it was a really, really popular series on the Learning Channel for a number of years. I've shot, in fact, I shot the pilot for the piece. And it became a very, very popular piece on the Learning Channel. And it is edited in a very, very different way. And as you go about your editing process now, you should think about how you're going to edit according to your content. If you're dealing with something like in Steiner's case, a really, really sad scene where this woman talks about her lost child, you know, it can't be quick and dirty cuts. It's got to be really languid, soft, you know, really slow cuts, because it complements the content that he's dealing with. If you're dealing with someone who's running a restaurant, perhaps, maybe even in your piece, when the guy comes out with the lamp, flops it on the table, I think that has to move. That's got to move, right? So keep that in mind when you edit. And these things, these two pieces, I think, are a vivid example of how you can use editing to accentuate your message. So, again, I won't spend too much time on this.
See if your mind is able to spread that feeling all down into the legs, into the floor, up into the sky, all around you. If you breathe deeply, is the breath only coming forwards into the front body, or can you also feel it activating the back body and go through the back body and where?
Close your eyes and listen to your breath. Just explore a little bit now, deep inside your belly. It's a spiral, it's a spiraling energy. As your animal gets stronger inside the outer body, and feel the power of the breath. It's called prana. You can move your awareness with the breath.
Thank you.
whole thing is, how can you develop your sensitivity in yoga? And that's the first thing we did today, was basically in going inside and feeling the difference between falling into the ground and connecting with the ground. There's a difference. My name is Victor Van Kooten, and I am a yoga teacher, a painter, and a massage therapist. Fell in love with Angela Farmer, got together with Angela Farmer, moved also over to Molivos here, where she was teaching at that time. And then we also started in 84 traveling the world together and starting to do something that was not normally done, is teaching together at the same time.
My name is Angela Farmer. I think what I do is endeavor to find my way back home, re-find that place inside myself I knew as a child, but on the journey through life got damaged and lost. That's the Canimera. I have found that yoga is one of the best ways to help re-find and return to that wonderful place that I call home. I have a very warm, affectionate feeling for the castle. So much of my early experiences here happened in the castle. And it is extraordinary. I mean, the energy is amazing. And the light and the views. It lifts you up.
I've never taught that much on the castle. We were meditating on the castle.
Pretty slow, huh? Mm-hmm. Pretty languid, pretty like really easy. You'd expect this, right? I mean, we're not delivering a ton of information, but just the pace of the editing, I think, really works with the content. This is going to be something completely different, and curiously, the formula that we use to do this thing is very, very much the same as the formula you saw earlier today. With the nurses needed piece. The drill was, when we did these trauma series, we'd go to a hospital, we'd arrange our presence with it beforehand. There would be one producer and three people with cameras, video journalists. And we'd man the emergency room door, and anything that came at the emergency room that was bleeding, giving birth, screaming, yeah, whatever it was, we just start to shoot, and the drill was you'd get releases later. And generally, people were pretty cool about signing releases. But to get this, the feeling of the tension, the high energy in an emergency room in a hospital, particularly a hospital like Denver General, it's got to be fast because the action is fast, quick and dirty, and it's really quite, it's trauma, and it's quite traumatic, to be honest with you. You'll see a couple of dramatic arcs here that are very, very much the same formula that we've been using through most of this workshop.
I don't know if I'm going to get them all.
When a big trauma's going on, my senses are at a peak.
Lateral entrance.
You know where you are?
We don't heal anybody. People heal themselves.
I don't know that any of us realize what we're getting into before we get there.
Any idea what the date is?
You can hand it to your side.
It's got to be in Trendelenburg so it doesn't suck the air when we do it.
People trust you to take a knife,
open them up.
It's
about as savage a thing as you can do to somebody.
You're at Denver General Hospital.
Denver used to be a frontier where pioneers went to stake their claim. Now, it is a major metropolis where modern-day cowboys and Indians routinely get shot and stabbed.
We have any idea what he was stabbed with?
The trauma doctors at Denver General Hospital see the violence on the front line firsthand.
The pressure is time. You gotta get things done fast. Time is bleeding with morbidity.
How many times have you shot?
How old are you?
16. It does hurt when you take a deep breath.
Most of the patients who come through our emergency room are either involved with alcohol or drugs.
I just shot my...
The emergency department is a body repair shop for the victims of penetrating trauma. It's known as the Knife and Gun Club.
You go to surgery right away.
All gunshot wounds are serious. Somebody's life is at stake. I'm Reg Franchos. I'm one of the attending general surgeons or trauma surgeons at Denver General Hospital.
Dr. Reg Franchos likes to say he had a real Renaissance education. After going to college on and off for 10 years and working as a carpenter,
there was no chest X-ray.
Reg decided he needed a career change.
It's an error in treatment. I was pounding nails during the day and going to the bar every night. And I said, this is not working out for me. I said, you know, I think I'm going to go to medical school.
Reg was determined despite having to start at the bottom of the medical ladder. But he was ready for the long haul and the long hours.
I did it in one day. I went to every emergency room in Boston until I found one that would give me a orderly spot. And shortly after I got there, I watched those guys crack a chest. And I said, that is unbelievable. I want to learn to do that.
Hi, sir. How you doing? I'm Dr. Hutchins. I'm one of the surgeons.
Dr. Deborah Hutchins worked in an emergency room in the Philippines for the Navy before coming to Denver General.
It's a Hutchins maneuver. I think it's got to be named.
This is the beeper that they use to announce there's an incoming ambulance, okay? And he's got an emergency case on board. So what we've done here is we've introduced the characters. You know, it's Reg and I guess Susan is her name. We know who they are. Deborah, rather, and now we're gonna marry these guys up with cases because these two were really compelling physicians, and they were articulate. They wanted to be characters. They had great stories to tell, and they had a way to tell them. And the bonus is we were able to marry them with really powerful cases, which is the great. Yes, it's the combination that we're looking for. So, well, we'll see how this works out.
I guess the trial would be first. How it acquired that name is beyond me. I'm Dr. Deborah Hutchins, a third-year general surgical resident.
Thomas Samuel Elliott, TS for short, is wasting away in a pool of blood after being stabbed in the chest in an alleged crack deal.
Off to the ER, you might want to go.
The report that I received was that there was a stab wound to the epigastrium, the upper abdomen, and that the patient did not have an attainable blood pressure.
The phase before you get in there and start seeing what's going on, at least for me, is anxiety. You want to be there now.
So that was one instance where I actually ran to that emergency room.
A couple minutes is a long time under those conditions. You have a set of rules that you follow as best you can, unless the situation prevents it. And then you do what you need to do to keep the patient alive. It's trauma.
Didn't get any pressure at all.
And this is a machine built to do this. So the whole machine has to work. And when it works, it's just the best thing in the world.
31-year-old male, single entrance wound right here in the chest. Upon arrival, he was pretty much pre-arrest. Not responding to anything at all. Said a couple of words, and that's all we ever got.
Everybody ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
The trauma team quickly tries to evaluate the seriousness of the stab wound to the chest. T.S. is bleeding to death, and his blood pressure is dropping.
Can you open your eyes for me? Can you open your eyes? Good. Look this way over here. Look over here. Look over here for me. Okay, look over the other way. There's going to be people doing a bunch of things to you, all righty?
In a once-in-a-lifetime procedure, Dr. Hutchins puts her finger in the wound to stop the bleeding and is amazed to feel the beating heart.
It was just instinctive for me to put my fingers in that tract just to find out if this was indeed going to the heart.
This is to his pericardium, probably OR.
This individual had been stabbed in the chest. She had her finger in the right ventricle. We've never seen anybody do that before.
I really put my fingers there to find out which direction it was going.
Cardium, and when I pulled my finger out.
Not really anticipating that I would really put my finger in the heart.
With her finger controlling the bleeding, T.S.'s blood pressure stabilizes.
Very weak pulse. Let's go.
Sort of intermittent.
Let's go.
Time to go. Go.
When I took my hand out, he had so much blood flow, it was just a veritable fountain. I had to put my finger back to keep him from bleeding to death, to get him to the O.R.
I mean, it's a dramatic injury, but it's a pretty simple concept. Here's the heart, here's the hole.
139 on the 49, you're going up.
It's amazing, you can control the bleeding like that.
That was just instinct in acting initially when he arrived. And that's what we're trained to do, act.
Deb travels the whole way to the OR with her finger in T.S.'s heart.
Hands down, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
We like to see the big injuries. You don't wish that on a patient, really. But we like to see the big injuries, sure. That's what we're here for.
Defying modern medical technology, T.S. is kept alive by a simple procedure, the right index finger of Dr. Deb Hutchins. It's another code 10. All lights and...
So what you're seeing is the same formula, but in, like, fast forward. You're seeing it in fast action. So we start out, we introduce the characters, right? We've got, we marry the characters with these powerful cases. And we, you know, the question is, what's the question? With this case here.
Is his heart going to get sewn back together? Is he going to survive this?
Is this guy going to live?
What
happened was he was in a crack deal gone bad. And, you know, I don't know who was, I suspect he was buying. And a guy stuck a knife into his chest and it put a hole in his heart, pierced his heart. So when the woman, you know, Deborah sticks her finger in there, she sticks her finger not in his chest, but actually in the ventricle of his heart. She pulls it out and the blood goes, whoop,
here's the fountain.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an extraordinary case. It's kind of like, remember Nicole, the girl who fell five stories? It's the same thing. So we're probably going to draw this thing out pretty long across the half an hour, right? Because it's in 1 month, this is the strongest case that we saw. So we're not going to let this thing go. You know, we're not going to tell you what's going to happen right now in minute number five of the piece. We're going to draw it. We're going to, you know, so we get the big dramatic arc. We're going to have smaller dramatic arcs to keep you hanging on till we get to the end of the program.
I have a question. How many do you have videotaping on this?
Me.
Just you.
Me. That was it. Oh, there was a producer there. A really, if you think I'm, you know, tightly wound, this producer was like extraordinarily tightly wound. And he just, you know, Fred, I need some more tape. All night he was just handing me tape and batteries and so forth to keep me going. And I filmed this thing from the beginning to the end. It was just an amazing scene. No one in the hospital had ever seen anything like this.
So when he came in on the gurney, and you got the close-up shot of that
wheel,
of the gurney, you know, the close-up shot of the wheel,
Was
that the same one he was on, or was it you got another one and you put it in, so we are assuming it's the same one,
but
because I'm thinking, how is he down there, up there? And
that's a very good question. That's a very good question.
I noticed you did a lot of shots at different, you know, the very unsettling angles as well.
Of the victim.
Not just the victim, but of the, you know, the walls, you know, suddenly at the ceiling and various other things.
Right.
But at very, you know, unsettling angles.
Right. Because you don't want it to be, it's chaotic. It's all chaos.
Right.
You don't want it to be orderly.
So was that after the fact?
It was after the fact. Most of the stuff, you know, the red footprints on the floor, the wheel of the gurney going down the hall. I laid on a gurney. They pushed me down a high shot, the ceiling. All that stuff we put on later. But I was the only one there that night. Who shot him for when he comes out of the ambulance to the gurney, and I followed him all the way, you know, up, you know, when Deborah had her finger in the guy's heart, into the elevator. Can you imagine? Into the elevator with these guys, jumped out of the elevator first, here they come by, and I follow them into the operating room. I mean, and, you know, through the entire operation, you'll see some shots here that you can't get now because they don't allow cameras at the hospitals anymore like this.
So, Bill, you're running, like, around the bed. I mean, you seem to be just... like circling.
Total freedom. Total
wherever
freedom.
You felt like going, knowing you need to get it in all these sort of odd balls.
Yeah, just as long as, you know, the rules were, if you don't get away in the way of these people, if you don't bother us, you know, you can stay here as long as you want, but when you start to become a problem, you know, we're crashing into you, then we gotta get you out of here. So you have to be very, very judicious about where you move, very, very kind of light-footed and stay out of their way, do your job, but let them do their job at the same time. Mm-hmm. As long as you can do that, you're okay. You can't make films like this anymore because partly as a result of this series, legislation was passed here in Washington saying that, you know, to shoot somebody coming into a hospital, you've got to get a release before you start to shoot. You have to get a release while they're in the hospital, and then 3 months later, you have to get them to sign another release after they're out, because when they come in here, you know, or the deal was we shot them, and the next day or the next, you know, when they woke up, we said, well, you signed this, and half of the time they're, you know, they're not completely. Yeah. So but watch this. We'll watch a little bit of this, not much, and I'll turn the sound off so that we can see, you know, how this thing is constructed. So we've got a woman here who was convicted of killing her husband, right? So here's our second dramatic arc. And she's in jail, and she decides to try to kill herself. She cuts her wrist, doesn't do a very good job of killing herself. And they take her to the hospital to get her wrist sewn up. So that's the second dramatic arc. This is it's a relatively short one, though. But again, we're using the same formula that you've seen in all of these programs. You know, I happen to think that this program was, you know, it was the guy who wrote, the producer who wrote the script did a very good job. I think it was well shot. We had extraordinary access.
Who will oversee the operation.
How can cutting people open be fun? It's kind of hard to describe, but everything is definitive. My purpose in the operating room in a case like that is just to assist the surgeon. We all pay our dues, and then when you're chief, you get your payback, and that's okay. That's the way it is. I wanted to do the case, sure, that's normal. Had to watch him do it. My time will come.
While Dr. Hutchins' finger saves T.S.'s life, the team still has to sew up his bleeding heart.
If you feel their pain, then you can't do it.
Trauma surgeon Dr. Reg Franchos races to the OR to sew up the stab wound to the heart.
The best day I ever had climbing mountains, I enjoyed about as much as I enjoyed doing those big trauma cases. Except when you climb mountains, you put yourself on the edge, and when you do this, you put somebody else on the edge. As I whiz by the door, I always yell in, what's the blood pressure? I can either hear him say none or some going down the hall. It doesn't matter, it's either none or some. Your mind is racing, you know, what injuries could he have that I can't see? What can I see?
The heart is now in the hands of the trauma team.
The first thing that you probably get over with time, man.
Look how quick this is. Look at this.
Yeah.
Look at this. It's like 2 second clips.
You're still doing okay.
Hey, everybody, I'm home.
Be able to pull yourself back from kind of the horror of the whole thing and look at the problems and realize that you have a short amount of time to solve them one after another.
With the bleed.
You see what's happening? We're letting him talk to. When I tell you guys, I want you to write to the pictures, you're basically laying down picture stories, and I want you to write to those pictures. You know, we're writing narration here, but we're also timing this edit with what our main characters say. You know, you have to step back from the horror, and we see he's standing in a pool of this guy's blood. There's this intimate relationship between the visuals and whether it's narration or it's natural sound on tape. Okay?
Being under control, Reg will begin the delicate process of sewing up the hole in T.S.'s heart.
I imagine it's just like being a military commander on a one-person scale. You look at the battlefield, you size up your problems, and you tackle them one at a time. Battle shifts, you change your plan.
With T.S. out of her hands, Dr. Hutchins checks up on her patients in the emergency department.
As a physician, you just can't not evaluate and take care of a patient.
I'm going to go through this a little quickly. This lady, you know, did not kill herself. She survived the cuts on her wrists. Deborah Hutchins kind of believed her that she didn't kill her husband, but turns out that the woman's own daughter testified against her in the trial. As a result of the death of her husband. And her dramatic arc ends pretty much around here. We're not even halfway into the program. It's pretty dramatic. It's pretty awful stuff. You can see why people gravitate toward this stuff, and they're glued to the television when they see this. Again, this was an extraordinarily popular series on the Learning Channel for quite a long time.
Put your finger in the hole and sew the hole up so the blood can't drain out, and if you do that quick enough, the heart will keep working. Guy's bleeding to death right in front of you. The only thing worse would be you bleeding to death right in front of you.
I was better blood pressure.
No, just like the same fear you get when you hear the brakes screech.
That in half.
So you're doing all right.
Something bad is happening.
Slow down the fluids.
And so you sweep it aside and start doing your job.
Fail a little bit, so slow them down now. We'll tell you.
It feels very unnatural and very viscerally unpleasant when you drive a stitch into that beating heart and it tries to pull away from you and pull the stitch out.
Now which way are you going?
You just want to get it through there as fast as you can and get the needle out of there before you tear something or hurt it. If you start thinking to yourself, if I don't put the stitch in and it rips out and it tears the heart muscle in my eye, you can't do that. You just say, now I'm going to put the stitch in the heart perfectly so that it doesn't tear through. We use these little Teflon patches. So we put the stitches through the Teflon patch, then through the heart on one side of the hole, then through the heart on the other side of the hole, and then through another Teflon patch, and then pull those patches down together.
The hole in T.S.'s heart is sewn up, but he is far from out of danger. Reg waits to see how T.S.'s heart will respond. Deb is upset about the case of Susan Hubbell because she let herself get emotionally involved.
Isn't that amazing? The guy's heart beating while he's... And you can see his face. It's pretty shocking stuff. So, you know, we have great characters here, and we try to weave these characters in with the cases, and they do a really good job of explaining the cases. We're asking, you know, these are these informal interviews that we talked about here at the workshop. Okay, what are you doing now? You know, what did you just do? What are you going to do? And they explain. They tell us what the story is about. If we don't ask those questions, there's no participatory observation.
Oh, that's a great thing. It's like dancing almost, but just with your hands. You're moving along and you're humming. Everything's going well.
Not losing much blood anymore.
Boy, that can change fast.
Blood bank? Gonna
fail. T.S.'s blood pressure drops. His heart beats irregularly.
Sucking a little air.
Heart's gonna fail. Blood pressure's high.
Come on, baby.
There we go.
You giving him the epi now?
But there's a point where you cross over where you think you've got him.
Panic time now.
It's not a time to slack off, but there's kind of this feeling you get inside. And when you go, I got him, I got him, I got him, I got him.
For now, T.S.'s heart is repaired.
You know, things went well, and potentially it'll do very well, but
we got to get through tonight. Heart will be irritable and tricky.
He's out of the woods when he gets up and walks out of here on his own 2 feet, and not until then. I can't believe we were able to pull that off. I can't believe it worked.
I should have been dead. Well, right thing on that. Being dead, I figure I should only do that once.
4 hours later, T.S. wakes up and miraculously remembers his life-saving surgery.
He's still got a reasonable amount of blood coming out of these drains. I'm Dr. Francho. So I'm the other person that operated on you.
You're a lucky guy.
You could be a lot sicker.
Well, a lot deader.
Or not here.
Let me go through the rest of this quickly. You guys want to see this through a little bit? Yeah? So he talks to him. T.S. remembered the whole thing. He said when he was, you know, being operated on, he felt something like rubbing his chest, and he was trying to push people away, and he heard a funny sound like zzzz, like that. And the surgeon said it's the first time he's ever heard anyone remember that. His story is not over yet. We actually follow him out of the hospital with his girlfriend, and he swears he's not going to do crack anymore. And a couple of days later, he comes in with a collapsed lung. And we had to go through this awful procedure where they make an incision here, and they get one of those metal thongs, and they grab a rubber tube, and they shove it into your lung without anesthesia, because apparently you can't deliver anesthesia when you're doing this thing. And, you know, they blow up your lung. They pump it up again. So they bring in this guy here.
He's rushed to Denver General, clinging to life.
When a big trauma is going on, my senses are at a peak. I'm Wendy LaRue, I'm the nurse medic.
This is a gang member who was shot in some gang activity, and they bring him in, and he's on the verge of death, and they pull him back.
at Denver General has to be one of the most scariest things that happened. When Garrett came in, he was very scared. He thought he was dying when he came in.
Waking up.
He was awake. And that's probably where my compassion comes in the most.
This time, look straight up.
He's waking up.
I only saw one
there. Don't shut one to the arm.
I thrive on the trauma. In the next 15 minutes, I'm going to use everything that I know to try and save somebody's life.
Garrick's wounds are serious. One of the bullets went through his right chest.
We got normal pulse, normal pressure.
I'm George Beatty McClain. Here's seeing my son, Gary McClain. He went to a liquor store, and the way they explained it to me, he had a rag, red rag hanging out of his pocket, and he asked the wrong crowd if they were getting some liquor. They were in the blue range of color, Crips as they call themselves. And so a confrontation started and they just shot him.
What pressure there, sir?
I know it hurts.
Garrick's lung has collapsed because the bullet traveled right through it. Dr. Hutchins must insert a tube into Garrick's chest to re-expand his lung.
An insertion of a chest tube hurts. It just hurts. And my goal is to distract them in any way I can from what's going on. I don't always want to know that my gunshot wound was gang members. I just want to know that I saved that 20-year-old's life.
I had one son killed already behind this. And it's like, it's pushing me to the edge. He was on the other side of the line. He was a Crip. You grew up around them, then that's what you have to be. You grew up over here around the Bloods, and that's what you have to be. Or they try to eliminate you.
For now, Garrick is not eliminated, but he's still critical.
A lot of pain. Would you like something for pain? Let me talk to the doctor. The knowing when you need to be there, the stroking of the head, that to me is nursing. I know you don't feel like you're breathing, but the machine is breathing for you. I promise you.
It's just somebody came along and told him you have to be bad, and that's it. No training and nothing, no schooling, no nothing. Just be bad. It's a psych out thing. And it's spread, and I don't know if it's Lucifer himself or what, but he's collecting a lot of them out there, and he's damaging their brains.
When this guy comes in, it's actually pretty, it's a pretty cool story. The father comes in, we didn't know who he was. We thought maybe this is a gang member, my God, you know. The guy comes in, and we introduce him, because he comes in, and we're talking to his son with cameras on, with a camera on. And we were like, it's an uh-oh moment. And we introduced ourselves, we're doing this and that, you know, and we said, who are you? And he says, I'm the guy's father. We go, can we talk to you? Can we interview you about your son and so forth? And he goes, yeah, sure, let me take my glasses off. We said, no, keep them on. And I'm standing on a chair shooting down at his son past him. And as you can see, he came up with some pretty incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. The end of the show ends with, you know, T.S. Eliot goes, he goes away. He comes back in with this collapsed lung, and he shares a room with this kid here. They're in a room facing each other. You know, they both have a second chance. So this is, you know, you look for these powerful cases. You know, you marry them with articulate characters, and you have a number of dramatic arcs in your story. That's how you get these people not only from one end of an episode to the other end of the episode, but from one episode to another episode. That's how you do it. You know, and sometimes you leave, if it's a sequence of episodes, you leave kind of an episode unresolved so that people come back next week and watch it. But it's always a question and answer. It's that conversation with your audience that we've been talking about for a couple of days now. What I'd like to do is I'd like to see your stuff now if I could. Yeah? Can I do that?
So really, I don't want it to be a piece about how we maintain 9/11 artifacts.
Right.
That's cool, and I think it will drive a little bit of interest, but really this story's meant to be about the agency having a historian. It's a 10-year-old agency. Why would he need a historian? You know, what function does he serve? And it's kind of weird.
How long has he been there?
3 years, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, he's a young guy. It's a young agency. It's they're doing some innovative things. They're doing like documentary films for workforce engagement and stuff like that. They've built this whole interactive timeline, which is sort of like a fresh thing to do. You know, when you think of historians, you don't think like web-based timelines where they have his. You know, that's part of his function. So I thought that kind of lent itself to the idea of, you know,
everything about this guy being this new age historian, and you know, but the hard part for me, the challenge is, you know, the limited amount of footage, but also how to marry it from, you know, this quiet bit at the beginning where he's, you know, investigating pieces of the World Trade Center and documenting it to the exhibit, and then to what this guy does and why people should care. So, it's a little challenging.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to like think really loosely in what he's doing. And I believe you have to start with this stuff.
Yeah.
And you have to start with an interesting opening, like, you know, this is not CSI. You know, this conversation with the audience pricks somebody's interest.
Mm-hmm.
And just let this thing roll for a while. And don't take him right away into, like, you know, with, you know, leaning on one of these pieces like he's, you know, Clint Eastwood or something.
Yeah.
And with a sign on him. Let it breathe for a while. Let us see what he's doing. Let, you know, somehow develop our curiosity. This is great. You know, this is great stuff. What do you envision this thing? How does it end?
And you know, that's the difficulty for me as well. It's, you know,
sometimes a dramatic arc is only when you're done telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've exhausted the information you have, you're happy that the story is told and it doesn't carry any more time. That's fine. You know, if you get the material that sustains 2 minutes or 4 minutes, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
finish it when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you have something that evokes a sense of ending. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It doesn't have to be as literal as him walking away out of the, you know, the warehouse, or the warehouse, you know, garage door coming down.
We start, we got an establishing shot of Elaine, hearing her working a little bit, going to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not first and foremost a printmaker, first I'm a painter, but printmaking has really changed the way I paint.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to periodically do printing because the way it changes the way my brain thinks, which gets to our controlling narrative that she does art to find focus and flow. You know, peace.
Okay. How much narration do you have there? 2 clips here. Where else?
Down here, a little more.
Right. Is this the first narration? The first time we hear you?
No. The first time you hear me is right here when we credential her.
Right.
You
said
who this is? Artist, teacher.
Okay.
So we're kind of flipping between Elaine and narrator. And now we've established what an aqua tint is. And but really, their opinions aren't what matters most. What matters most is that Elaine Wilson spent another day making art and finding peace of mind. As Elaine says, making images is as necessary to me as breathing.
I wonder if there's a place where we can allude to this breathing thing further up.
Well, we could kill that and top it. You know, when you're identifying her, on the first narrator, when we're saying, we're defining who this woman is, because that's part of who she is.
And let me ask you, do you have, she talks almost continuously here.
Right.
Do you have any material where she's not talking that you could just like let it breathe after important thoughts?
I have another file of B-roll I can put in there.
Okay. After she, because it's like one sentence after another, boom, 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 boom.
Right.
You know, after she says the important things that you're trying to accentuate here, she talks about the flow and so forth. I get that. I like that. I love it. You know, runners to get the same thing. You know, guys who get all pumped up with weights to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let those thoughts breathe. You know, and watch. So let us watch her work while she tries to achieve this flow.
Okay.
And anything that doesn't contribute to this whole idea about flow and this altered state of mind, get rid of it.
Yep.
We don't need details about metal, this and that, you know what I mean? Just keep the basics and let this thing breathe. You have a nice piece here, but it's a little too...
Painful.
No, she's a little too, she's a little, there's still a little too much information. Like you say, you know, sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
This is very rough at the moment. I'm just trying to pull pieces, but I've got
it has a black
basic
to the right.
Script here.
Okay.
So when we're not hearing anything, that's where I'm doing...
Okay. Where do we go from here?
I've got to go back in and pull these pieces down and get this narration so that I can do the flow better. The idea is that
You're seeing the pomp and circumstance. She's talking about how great it is. We're telling that they're heroes in their own respect as well,
mm-hmm.
and that this idea that they want to get this Maryland museum going to honor everybody. And that's why you'll see the Maryland flag and focus on that Maryland flag to try and bring that together.
I'm concerned that there's a lot of talking ahead here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, when you write narration, how old are your kids?
25.
Do you have, they have kids?
Mm-mm.
Do you have nephews and nieces, young kids?
Mm-mm.
You have,
Just my kids.
Okay, no brothers or sisters have? Do you know any 14-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids?
Yeah.
Think of the 12-year-old, the smart 12-year-old, and you write narration.
You bring it down.
It's got to be short, declarative sentences
mm-hmm.
that they can understand, because this is going to go by one time. And if they don't get it,
it's gone.
They're gone, and they're gone.
Yes, gotcha.
It's gone, and they're gone. So you've got to be short, declarative sentences, you know, simple words, and written for a smart 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's a lot of narration here, and there's a lot of these people talking to heads. I don't see what these people do
okay.
besides that.
So I have, as you notice,
yeah.
my audio
okay.
roughly, and
okay.
I'm about maybe halfway through.
Okay.
I've done nothing with the pictures yet. I have a rough sense. I haven't even logged them, to be honest.
Okay.
I just have a general idea of what I have.
I think what's going to be important here is the order of the pictures that we see of him working with the food and so forth, and how that, you know, what he's saying somehow doesn't have to match literally,
right.
but can somehow the images, you know, evoke
yeah.
what he's saying or somehow
and
match.
I have the whole coffee, you know, I did manage to do a sequence when he was making
okay.
the coffee. Remember yesterday, you could see it's really thick,
okay.
chewy coffee.
Okay, I remember, I saw
yeah.
it. Yeah,
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 so I have,
okay.
you know, a few.
So you're going to start to work on the timeline now, the visual timeline?
Well, I still have about a third of the...
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. You got a long way to go.
I know.
Okay. All right. You can't go to sleep tonight. You have to stay up. All right.
So, Bill, what are you working on right now? What are you doing as you're working your way around here? What's the purpose of this project?
Well, you know, I'm trying to get a sense of where everybody is, and because we've got about 24 hours left to this, and it's important to really get our head around where everybody's project is.
Are we rocking?
Okay, great.
Kind of nice, you know.
Do we see them doing stuff besides talking to us?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we've got this sequence, which I'm going to compress.
Okay.
So kind of, I don't know, trying to focus on challenges, you know, the inventory's not right, the chiller's broke.
You know, you start this thing, you say, this is what, you know, Joe Smith and John Doe have always wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
have their own brewery
mm-hmm.
And make their own beer.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have it. And this is a party, you know, honoring their latest blend. I have no idea what the party is honoring, you know, fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to start with something dynamic like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then return to that at the end
okay.
of the story.
Okay, okay, okay.
All right?
Yep.
Okay, you've got a piece here, you know, you have a piece, but you have to deal with the raw material that you have, I think in a smart way.
Yeah.
To make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy that.
So, if I can help you, that's what I'm here for.